Morning. Beautiful to see you here today. I am glad to assemble together with a lot of God's people who want to worship Him, remember what He's done for us. I also appreciate the opportunity to speak this morning as Steve is gone. And I also appreciate the prayer. I not only pray that I can have clear thoughts, but I can also express myself clearly. Have you ever wondered how it is that Jesus was able to get on the cross for us? I'm not talking about the underlying motivation, His love for us, but when the moment came, when He was right there, He was about to get on the cross, have you ever wondered how He was able to get on the cross? You know, we may think that He is the Son of God, He can do everything. He didn't have any difficulties. Well, He did. In fact, right after that text we just read for the Lord's Supper in Matthew 26, verse 39, we see that He prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. If there is any other way, Father, let's do it the other way." However, right after that, He added, "Yet not as I will, but as you will." How is it that Christ was ready to get on the cross? Well, maybe the answer is even simple, if you will. Jesus was ready. He had been preparing Himself. He had been growing. He had been working towards that moment. And when the moment came, He was ready. It was difficult, but He was ready. He had been growing towards that point. The nice thing is that in the scriptures we have the way in which Jesus grew. We can learn how He grew, and we can apply that to our lives today. And so what we're going to do for this lesson is we're going to look at the four ways in which Jesus grew. And we're going to learn what they are. And we are going to live today with a commitment to apply these four ways to grow in our lives. First of all, let us take a look at Jesus' earlier days. The only episode, really, that we have from Jesus' birth and His early years to the beginning of His ministry is found in Luke 2 when He was 12. And He is going to Jerusalem for the Passover with Mary and Joseph. And He stays behind in the temple. In Luke 2, 41 through 51, we have that episode where He is there in the temple and Mary and Joseph go start heading home, and then they realize Jesus is not there, and they come back and look for Him, and after 3 days they found Him in the temple asking questions, participating in the discussion, and all the people there are marveling about what He's like. Seems like it's just this account is just there floating in the middle of the narrative, maybe to satisfy our curiosity of what Jesus was like when He was a child. Only sometimes we look at this to emphasize Jesus' attachment to His Father. Well, look at the context. In Luke chapter 2, right before that, we have Jesus' birth and then His presentation in the temple. And then, right after that, in Luke chapter 3, we have the beginning of John's preaching in the preparation for Jesus' ministry to come. The account of Jesus at age 12 in the temple is connected to the account of His birth and the beginning of the ministry by two key verses. Luke chapter 2 verse 40. The child continued to grow and became strong, increasing in wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. Luke is saying, well, if you wonder how Jesus got to that point of being at age 12 and making these people marvel in the temple, just look back there. This is how He had been growing from the point He was presented in the temple to the point He is in the temple in Jerusalem. The child continued to grow and became strong, increasing wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. Well, are you wondering how Jesus was able to become the one who became when the start of His ministry happened? Look at Luke 2:52. And Jesus kept increasing in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. This is the Jesus at 12 years old. He kept growing. And that basically Luke is explaining to us how we are meeting the Jesus that we are meeting during his ministry. Jesus has been growing and preparing himself. And not only we see that he was growing, but we see how he was growing. And that's why we're going to spend the remainder of our lesson developing this theme in Luke 2:52 and the four ways, the four dimensions in which Jesus grew. He grew in wisdom, in stature, and in favor with God, and in favor with man. Before we do that, though, just a side note. There is another character in the scriptures of whom it is said just about the same thing, about his growth. Turn to 1 Samuel chapter 2. 1 Samuel chapter 2. You remember Samuel's mother, Hannah, was barren, and she prayed to God, and God eventually gave her this child, and she promised God, well, if you give me a child, I'm going to give it back to you. And this is why Samuel is in the with the priest, with Eli the priest. 1 Samuel 2, verse 22. Now Eli was very old, and he heard all that his sons were doing to all Israel, and how they lay with the women who served at the doorway of the tent of meeting. He said to them, why do you do such things? The evil things that I hear from all these people. No, my sons, for the report is not good which I hear the Lord's people circulating. If one man sins against another, God will mediate for him. But if a man sins against the Lord, who can intercede for him? But they will not listen to the voice of their father, for the Lord desired to put them to death. And then you have verse 26. Now the boy Samuel was growing in stature and in favor both with Lord and with man. You can see the contrast there between Eli's sons who were doing everything wrong, and there, Samuel who was growing in favor with God and man. He was basically becoming the man that Eli's sons should have been. And if you know what kind of man of God Samuel was, then once you come to a similar verse in Luke chapter 2, you shouldn't be surprised of the Jesus you're going to meet after that verse. Wisdom is the first way that we see there in Luke chapter 2, verse 52. First way in which we are told that Jesus grew. Now, wisdom, knowledge, and instruction in the Old Testament wisdom literature are often parallel. They are often almost used as synonyms. In the world, however, wisdom is a little more blurry of a term. Many times, somebody who's very knowledgeable is considered to be wise. However, knowledge and wisdom are two separate things. They go together, but they are two separate things. Wisdom is practical. Wisdom is properly applied knowledge and experience. It is good to know what is the right thing to do. But it is only when you do the right thing at the right time in the appropriate context that you are applying knowledge, that you see wisdom at work. And so the wisdom that we have from God is not simply knowledge of Him, but it is knowledge of Him and of His will that changes our lives. And the worst thing of all, then, would be to just know the Word of God and what He can do for us and not do anything about it. True wisdom is precious and rare in this world. In fact, in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, we see Paul writing that the wisdom of God is almost considered foolishness by the world. They are so separate and so apart, two different dimensions of wisdom, that they are just one thing is completely different from the other. In Proverbs chapter 8, we have Lady Wisdom speaking, as if wisdom is personified, is actually talking herself. She says, take my instruction and not silver, and knowledge rather than choicest gold. For wisdom is better than jewels, and all desirable things cannot compare with her. If you are offered on one side silver, gold, diamonds, precious materials, jewels, and on the other side wisdom, Lady Wisdom says, take wisdom, because it is so much more precious than all these that you have on this side, all these precious materials that you can own. It is much more precious than anything that you can ever have. Wisdom is valuable. And so we start appreciating it. And if we really appreciate the value of wisdom, then we start seeking it. And once we start seeking it with dedication, it is not hard to find. Still in the same chapter there, at the end, in verse 32, still Lady Wisdom speaking, she says, "Now therefore, O sons, listen to me, for blessed are they who keep my ways. Heed instruction and be wise and do not neglect it. Blessed is the man who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at my doorposts. For he who finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord, but he who sins against me injures himself. All those who hate me love death." The benefits of wisdom are so strong that they can make the difference between life and death. It changes our lives in a powerful way. Now, it is interesting to see if you read through Proverbs, the amount of verses that just say, they just warn us, get wisdom, period. There is a great amount of those verses. It seems almost as if there are just as many verses that tell us, get wisdom, as there are about the effects of getting wisdom. It is so important, it is mandatory that we get wisdom. Well, how do we start? We start from a verse that you probably all thought of when we started talking about wisdom. Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. And then the parallel verse there, crossing the same idea in chapter 9, verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. It is only when we start being honest with ourselves. It is only when we start realizing that we are weak, that we are finite, that we are sinful. It is only when we realize that we are not that good. It is when we realize that we are not really anybody. It is only then that we start setting our priorities straight. It is only then that we start realizing our need for somebody higher than we are. It is only then that we start putting self apart and putting God first. That is how we start pursuing wisdom. There's only the alternative, as expressed there in the second part of verse 7. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Every time we refuse to listen to God, every time we put ourselves first, every time we just don't care about what God says, every time that happens, we are fools. And then we have also chapter 2, Proverbs chapter 2, verses 1 through 6. And here really we should read a lot more, but we just get a sample, and I hope you'll take some time at home to do some of these readings in a more thorough way. How do I get wisdom? Well, my son, verse 1 of Proverbs chapter 2, if you will receive my words and treasure my commandments within you, make your ear attentive to wisdom, incline your heart to understanding. For if you cry for discernment, lift your voice for understanding. If you seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasures, then you will discern the fear of the Lord and discover the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. How do I get wisdom? Well, listen to words of wisdom. Now, let's say, for example, that you wanted to learn Italian. You wanted to learn how to speak Italian. Where? What do you do? You go to somebody who speaks Italian. I have a couple of phone numbers if you need. But it's very simple. If you need to learn something, you go to somebody who knows that. If you need wisdom, you go and search words of wisdom, and you search with dedication. You search like searching for a hidden treasure. You don't just give up the first trial. You keep searching and searching. You must be willing, and eventually you come to God. You see that behind wisdom there is God. Just like behind water, like a stream of water, there is its spring. Behind wisdom there is God. From the mouth of God, says this passage in verse 6, from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. Ask God, James 1:5, ask him for wisdom and he will give it to you. Expose yourself to your word, spend time with it, And that's how you get wisdom. The second way which we see Jesus grow is in favor with God. Now, there in Luke 2:52, it talks about Jesus growing and increasing in wisdom, stature, and in favor with God and men. If you just turn to the next chapter, in Luke 3, verse 21, we see that when all the people were baptized, Jesus was also baptized, and while he was praying, heaven was opened, and the Holy Spirit descended upon him in bodily form like a dove. And a voice came out of heaven, "You are my beloved Son, in you I am well pleased." Favor with God. God openly says it. "You are my beloved Son, I am pleased with you." And then you go to the next chapter, when Jesus is taken in the wilderness, and he is tempted by the devil 40 days. And every time he's tempted, his response is, Luke 4, verse 4, "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone." Verse 8, Jesus answered him, "It is written, you shall worship the Lord your God and serve him only." Verse 12, and Jesus answered and said to him, "It is said, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test." God showed favor with Jesus. And Jesus relied upon God and his word when difficulties came. And this is also how Jesus got to the point of being ready to be on the cross, relying on his Father. Even through difficulties, you keep relying on God. Now, favor with someone is not strictly something that I can have full control on. I can try to seek favor with someone, but it doesn't mean I'm going to get it. For example, let's try this illustration. Husbands. Let's say your wife is gone for a few hours. You are home all by yourself. What are you going to do? Well, you're probably going to open the fridge, fix yourself a sandwich about 2 feet long. You're going to sit in front of the TV watching your favorite show or your favorite sports. And it's going to be a few hours of just you, the TV, and your big sandwich. What you can do is you can spend part of that time that you are home by yourself maybe doing the dishes or maybe doing some other work around the house. And you can, you know, husbands are probably thinking, oh man, you can definitely tell you haven't been married that long. But you can find some time out of all the time that you have by yourself to do something that eventually, when your wife gets home, will please her. And yes, that will be the only time in your life when she gets home and she says, "I just wanted a hug." But you can try to seek her favor. We can seek God's favor. God's favor is his answer to our attempts to please him. And the nice thing is that we don't have to try too much because he told us what to do to please him. And actually, in his word, he provided a way that will please him, but will save us. So it works both ways. It pleases us, it does good to us, and eventually also pleases God. It works either way. Back to Proverbs, just chapter 3 there. And I want you to notice the structure of these few verses we're going to read. And again, we should read a lot more. And I trust that you'll take the time to read some of this on your own. Proverbs chapter 3, verses 1 through 8. "My son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments. For length of days and years of life and peace they will add to you. Do not let kindness and truth leave you. Bind them around your neck, write them on the tablet of your heart. So you will find favor and good repute in the sight of God and men. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. It will be healing to your body and refreshment to your bones." Do you see there the pattern? There is like a "do this and this will happen to you." Verse 1, for example, "My son, do not forget my teaching." Do this. Do not forget my teaching. Let your heart keep my commandments. What will happen to you? Verse 2. Length of days and years of life and peace they will add to you. They go together. They there's a delicate balance there, that if you do a certain thing, then these blessings will happen to you. And the whole scripture is filled with ways that we can seek to please God, and in turn we'll obtain favor from Him. How about favor for man or with man? First of all, why would Jesus ever seek favor with man? Why is that? I thought Jesus didn't come to seek favor with man. We'll come back to that. Favor with man is a consequence of the relationship that it is developed between wisdom and favor with God. If you turn, for example, to Deuteronomy chapter 4, this is a long discourse that Moses presents before Israel as he's about to pass on and Israel is about to enter into the promised land. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 5. Moses says, I have taught your statutes and judgments just as the Lord my God commanded me that you should do thus in the land where you are entering to possess it. Verse 6, so keep and do them, for that is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples who will hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. For what great nation is there that has a God so near to it as the Lord our God whenever we call on Him? Or what great nation is there that has statutes and judgments as righteous as this whole law which I'm setting before you today? Moses is saying, basically, if you keep God's law, the other nations will admire you for the kind of people that you become, and in turn you will reflect God's glory in doing that. The world, I believe, admires God's people in a way. They may never say to you, and they will be willing to criticize God's people for being boring, being old, being antique, being strict. However, in a world of confusion, some will admire our focus. In a world of uncertainty, some will admire our confidence. In a world of relaxed morals, some will admire our integrity. In a world of struggle, some will admire our peace. Christians have a tranquility that this world does not have. And I think people admire that in God's people. You have the example of Joseph, how the Lord was with him and he found favor with Potiphar. And then when even he was in jail, in the bottom of the jail, he still found favor in the sight of the head jailer there, and he was put in charge of managing a jail. Who's so crazy to put in charge one in the jail who's in prison in charge of all the other prisoners? Hey guys, I got the keys. Party tonight. Still, it was a visible sign of God's favor with Joseph. How is it then that Jesus sought favor with men? Well, Jesus sought favor with men not by giving them what they wanted, but by giving them what they needed. It is very different. Let's turn to John chapter 4. It is a passage where Jesus breaks definitely many barriers there. John chapter 4, when he meets that woman in Samaria by the well of Jacob, and they start talking, and eventually that woman will run around saying, I've met the one. John chapter 4 verse 6. And Jacob's well was there, so Jesus, being wearied from his journey, was sitting thus by the well. It was about the sixth hour. There came a woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus said to her, give me a drink. For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. Therefore the Samaritan woman said to him, how is it that you, being a Jew, ask me a drink since I am a Samaritan woman? For the Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. And Jesus answered and said to her, if you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. and then they keep talking. It is interesting to notice that Jesus had nothing to do, being a Jewish man, had nothing to do with speaking to a woman who was a complete stranger to him. Jesus, as a Jew, had nothing to do with starting to talk with a Samaritan. He had nothing to do with that. However, do you know what the biggest barrier that Jesus broke is? The Son of God had nothing to do with being weary, dirty, and tired, sitting by a well somewhere in Samaria, where he doesn't belong, while he belongs in heaven, and he was still there. That is the biggest barrier that Jesus broke. And when we look at Jesus, we have to feel uncomfortable. We must feel uncomfortable. There's just not something right with us if we look at Jesus and we think we are fine. Favor with man starts right here among us. It starts by looking at the one behind you, looking at the one in front of you, trying to find out what their griefs are, what their sorrows are, what their joys are, trying to help them. And then it keeps going all across the auditorium and you end up finding out what the person that sits complete opposite side of the auditorium from you, what their issues are, what the problems are, and then you can do something to help them. And then eventually we'll go into the world. And yes, the world is full of people that behave like a child who is sick and he knows that the medicine is good for him, but he doesn't want to take it just because it tastes bad at first. But we are still to do like Jesus, to seek to give men what they needed. And we have it right here. Fourth way which Jesus grew is stature. The change in stature is the most evident sign of growth. Growing up, I have a few relatives that we would only see a couple of times a year. And this great aunt of mine, every time she saw me, she went to my mom and she would tell her, "Oh, he has gotten so tall." I would be like 19 feet today if I've gotten that tall, but every time she saw me, "Oh, he's gotten so tall." She could see that I was growing. Physical growth also explains us how growth happens. You know, after 6 months, I would see my great aunt again, and I gotten so tall. Well, it's not that I just sat there and did nothing. I actually, every day, I ate and fed my body and let it grow, and that is how I would get so tall. You need to feed growth. Otherwise, growth doesn't happen. Stature, as represented by the passing of time, is also a visible sign of progress. Now, if you are 12 years old, you are expected to be as tall as a 12 years old, as wise as a 12 years old, as in favor with God as a 12 years old, as in favor with man as a 12 years old. If you are 30, well, you will be at that point with all your growth at 30. Stature is a visible marker of where we should be with all our growth. If I look at myself in the mirror and I'm 50 one day, I better be 50 in all my growths. Otherwise, something not natural is happening. It's just growing only in certain dimensions and not in others. I would be deformed. Lack of growth is a complaint, if you will, that Paul has with the Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 3. We'll read the first 2.5 verses there. "I, brethren, could not speak to you as to spiritual men, but as to men of flesh, as to infants in Christ. I gave you milk to drink, not solid food, for you were not able to receive it. Indeed, even now, you are not yet able, for you are still fleshly." Paul is saying, you were young. I gave you the food that was appropriate for your age. However, now time has gone by and I was expecting you to have grown, but still I need to feed you baby food because you have not grown. Something has happened, but it's not natural. Growth has not taken place. Folks, we must grow. Grow is expected. If your son, if your daughter, they don't grow, well, the first thing, you go to the doctor. There's something wrong. If growth doesn't happen, there's something wrong. Grow is expected. We have looked at how Jesus grew, the four ways in which he grew, in stature, in wisdom, in favor with God, and in favor with men. We have seen how we can grow in wisdom, and we have the tools to grow in wisdom. We have seen that growing in wisdom eventually will lead us to grow in favor with God, because the two things are very strictly connected. And this will also reflect on our favor with men. We are growing favor with men by giving them what they need. And we have seen how stature is a visible marker of how we need to be up to date with all four growths. Otherwise, we are not growing naturally because we must grow. Without growth, we are not going to heaven. Now, it would be almost too easy to say during the invitation, if you think that you have not been growing properly, then come forward and we'll help you. We all know that we have not been growing properly, at least in some areas of our lives. However, our homework for today, for the rest of the week, for the rest of our lives, is to grow. We have seen the ways in which we are to grow. We have seen ways in which we can grow and become better people for God than we were yesterday, than we were even this morning. If there is anything that we can do for you, we can help you start your growth or maybe even restart your growth. If we can assist you with anything, come forward with anything.